Bureaucratic Processes. Written by Tsude Imina. Narrated by Rhea314. Phantom, the Scum Villain's Self-Saving System by Mo Xiang Tongxiu. Relationship, Mo Beijun / Shang Tinghua. Rating explicit, no archive warnings apply. The first time Mo Beijun meets the wretch, back before Mo Beijun is even Mo Beijun, but yet the unnamed son of the Mo Bei clan, still vying for the throne and the chance to earn his own title, his own name, it was in battle. A clash between demons and a set of passing cultivators, set off when one of the cultivators strayed too close to where Mo Beijun and his people had set up camp. The clash is vicious and bloody, cultivators and demons falling upon one another in a storm, blades flashing and ice crackling, and the first glimpse Mo Beijun had of the man was a cowering form ducking behind a nearby cart. A rat, Mo Beijun had thought viciously, making a note to come back and take care of him later, if none of his subordinates spotted him. His plans get thrown off course, of course, when the assassin his uncle had lying in wait chooses the distraction of the battle as the moment to launch their attack, capitalizing on the disarray of Mo Beijun's forces to carve through them and launch an attack from Mo Beijun's back. Mo Beijun kills them, of course, slices their head clean off, the shadow demon's body dissolving back into smoke, but not before the bastard puts their claws right through Mo Beijun's side, punching dagger-long poisoned nails right through him. Mo Beijun manages to take one last staggering step, casting an eye out for retainers, who all now appear to be dead, before sinking to his knees, unable to stop his pained hiss as he feels the poison start to take true effect, the world swimming around him. At the very least, Mo Beijun thinks, as he falls to the ground, the world going dark, since all of his retainers are already dead, none of them will be able to take advantage of the chance to try and murder him, gaining his brother's favor. So Mo Beijun goes down, and it's not that he doesn't expect to survive. He either will or he won't, the poison either burning off or burning right through him. And Mo Beijun is strong. He has good chances. But what he doesn't expect is to wake up and find that sometime while he's been passed out, someone has dragged him into a grain storage shack. What he doesn't expect is to see bandages around his middle, and the pungent scent of medicinal paste in the air, and a mousy-looking cultivator staring at him with terrified eyes from the corner of the shack, hands frozen where they are in the process of grinding up more medicinal plants. Mo Beijun's eyes narrow, the air turning cold as ice begins to crackle up the walls, already beginning to gather, ready to surge in a hail of razor daggers. And he doesn't even end up getting that far, because the cultivator is immediately throwing himself at Mo Beijun's feet, prostrating himself. Wait, wait, please, mercy, mercy! There are a half dozen swords of ice hanging in the air now, the closest a bare inch from the cultivator's neck, close enough that a single stray movement will be able to draw blood. And the cultivator swallows thickly, trembling, bowing their head even lower as they shake. Please, please, my lord, no, my king, this servant saved your life, gave you medical attention. Surely you see that this servant has no plans against you. He keeps prattling like that, spilling out noise, not a single word of it worth listening to, and Mo Beijun finds his eyes falling to the man instead, taking him in. Cultivator robes, fairly plain. The unadorned robes of a student yet. White and pale brown. Tsongqiong mountain robes, Mo Beijun thinks, noting their cut, the simple embroidery on the collar and sleeves, and feels his eyes narrow further, gaze cutting and cold. The ice knife presses closer, coming to press against the cultivator's neck, drawing a single sweeping drop of blood. If anything, the cultivator only gets louder, wailing now, pleading desperately. A coward, Mo Beijun thinks with disgust. Tsongqiong Mountain are one of the more noble ones, supposedly, brave, honorable, one of those sects that the rest all like to talk about. Commoners spreading gossip like coin. but the man's sect seems to have had little impact on his character. Please, my king, reconsider, reconsider. I'll do anything. I can help you, please. No one knows Songcheong Mountain better than me. No one knows the sects better. Wait, wait, wait. I know secrets too, don't kill me. I have information that could prove crucial to solidifying your place and taking the throne. That sends a cold bolt through Mulbei Jun. And then he's on his feet, one hand tangling in the cultivator's collar as he jerks them to their feet, yanking them up to stare into his face. The cultivator barely keeping his feet. His side twinges, but he barely feels it. My place? Mulbei Jun snaps, voice cold as ice, blue eyes glowing, cold and calculating and suspicious. And what would a human know about my place? The cultivator sucks in a breath, eyes wide and terrified, cowering in his grip. It's the first time Mulbei Jun has gotten a proper look at his face. A little plain, but handsome enough, even twisted in fear, with dark eyes and hair that's a shade too brown to be properly black, thrown into disarray. It's a face Mulbei Jun recognizes. The rat, he thinks, and feels his disgust only grow. The cultivator has gone a second too long without answering, quailing in terror, and Mulbei Jun's already thin string of patience snaps, his hand tightening around the cultivator's neck, claws digging in. Tell me, Mulbei Jun says, coldly, voice cruel, what it is you think you know about my place, human. Or maybe I'll just kill you here and save myself the trouble of listening to you beg. That gets the human to speak, their face growing pale, whatever terrified petrification that had frozen him silent abruptly fracturing. A dam breaking to give way to a raging river. Wait, please, I know things, I do. I know that you're the youngest son of the Mulbei clan, that your brothers are closer in line, but that it's you your father favors, that they're trying to kill you for it. I know your uncle is trying to... The name alone hits him like a bolt of lightning, rage following in an icy tide. Mulbei Jun's hand tightens around his throat, and he snarls, Lin Guanjun? What do you know about Lin Guanjun? Years now, he's been caught up in this game of chess with his uncle. His brother is only pawns on the board. And now, to hear his name come from the lips of some trash cultivator, Mulbei Jun doesn't trust it. The cultivator wheezes, blood dripping down his neck where Mulbei Jun's claws have dug in, hands grabbing at Mulbei Jun's wrist, clawing desperately. He can't breathe, Mulbei Jun realizes, and forces his fury to calm enough that he can loosen his fingers. The cultivator, sucking in a frantic breath, their face red, tears stinging at the corner of their eyes. Tell me everything you know about Lin Guanjun. Mulbei Jun grits out, meeting their eyes. His eyes glow a furious, radiant blue, like light shining through cracked ice. His fingers squeezing warning around the cultivator's throat, and the cultivator quails, and lets out a sob, and shakes in his grip. But does. The cultivator, this trash human, this cowardly little rat, talks. And Mulbei Jun listens. His uncle has been after the throne since the moment of his father's coronation, the rat tells him. The beating his father had given him, breaking all four of his limbs when the two fought for the right to the throne, only giving root to the seeds of resentment that have bloomed since. He hated your mother, the rat tells him. She had your father's favor and sent him from court, and so he swore that you would be the first of your father's sons to fall, to pay her back for the slight. He's bent all three of your half-brothers to the task, promising each in turn that they'll be the one to get the throne, with him sitting as their advisor. He plans to kill them all too, the rat tells him, but he'll make use of them first. The second prince was the one to gain a favor from the shadow demons, and Lin Guanjun made use of it to send one after you. It won't be the last plot. Poison, the rat tells him. Poison, the third prince is going to be next, and he's going to use poison. The venom of a midnight summer salamander viper, distilled into a poison that will consume your power. The antidote is the petals of the lunar Mellifera lily. You need to get some. You can find them at... Enough! Mulbei Jun snaps, and throws the human to the ground, who immediately scrabbles away, clutching at his throat and coughing. Mulbeijun casts a cold eye over them, standing there with his robe still open, bandages slowly bleeding through at his side, voice cold and cutting. "Know that if you lied to me, human, you won't survive it." And then Mulbeijun turns, a vicious slash of his hand opening the shadows before him as he strides into the portal, not sparing a backward glance for the rat cowering on the ground behind him. There is no part of him that considers that the human may have been telling the truth, that such a weak, cowardly rat, an insignificant unnamed student of a human cultivation sect, might somehow know the key to Ling Guanzun's plans, might be an agent of his, or a spy, an informer, anything. It is as ridiculous as it is impossible. Mulbeijun had felt the man's spiritual energy, and he'd been weak, barely worth noticing, hadn't even made the least attempt to try and fight his way free. Nothing more than the sort of cowardly rabble that ends up as the collateral as true figures of power fight. His knowledge and Ling Guanzun's resentment of his plans, they can be pieced together from common knowledge alone. That Ling Guanzun is the brother of the Northern Desert King and a powerful and ambitious demon. Of course he'd be after the throne. That he's using Mulbeijun's brothers for it is an easy guess to make, their feud against him well known. There will only be one heir to the throne, and as the son of a mere concubine, his brothers have always resented him his father's favor. The rest, that his brother hired the shadow demon, sent it on Ling Guanzun's behalf, that is an easy conjuration, a claim that can't be easily verified, spun as easily as seeing the shadow demon and recognizing what it is, then making up a way to link it back to Ling Guanzun. The raving of a desperate, fast-mouthed coward, grasping at straws to find something that would spare his life. Mulbeijun doesn't trust it, and he doesn't believe a word of it. Mulbeijun still collects the petals of the lunar Mellifera lily anyway, keeping a fresh supply tucked in his pocket wherever he goes. And 3 weeks later, at a banquet, when the rune he's had set into his ring starts to warm, heating with a warning of poison in his drink, Mulbeijun's eyes narrow and he thinks, "Hmm." And when he shoves his third brother to his knees and yanks his head back and pours the wine down his throat, watching as his brother spits and snarls and immediately turns pale and begins to howl as his demonic energy begins to bleed away, melting like ice beneath the blistering heat of the noonday sun as Mulbeijun watches, Mulbeijun thinks, maybe that human was worth talking to, after all. The very next day, Mulbeijun goes and finds him again, following the tracking spell he'd woven into the human's shadow. Shang Tinghua is a curious creature, a student of Anding Peak, which explains his weakness. He's loud and timid and nervous and terrified, a cowering, flinching caricature of a man, pathetic even by human standards, and yet. And yet. When Mulbeijun had found him again, stepping out of the shadows into the room of the inn Shang Tinghua had been staying at and demanded to be told how Shang Tinghua had known, Shang Tinghua had flinched and cried and blubbered and begged for mercy, mouth running, saying everything and anything, except for how he got his information. Mulbeijun doesn't even realize he has managed to avoid the question until weeks later. Mulbeijun had pinned him against a wall, claws tied around his throat, holding him too high that his feet barely touched the ground, swords of ice hanging in the air around him, and Shang Tinghua had wheezed and pleaded and eventually blurted out something about how one of the Solstice Demon clans was planning to double-cross Mulbeijun when he next met with them, and unless he wanted to lose the key stream of revenue the trade with their clan provided, he needed to break into their house and steal the ledger hidden behind the mirror in the clan leader's office. Mulbeijun's eyes had narrowed, hand tightening around Shang Tinghua's throat. "If you're lying to me..."
I'm not, please, I'm not. This servant wouldn't dare."
Shang Tinghua had pleaded, eyes wide. And in the end, Mulbeijun had given him one last hard shake, warning, before letting him drop. Shang Tinghua sliding down the wall, the knives of ice still hovering in the air warningly. "I'll test this information," Mulbeidun had said coldly, standing there in the center of the inn room, eyes meeting Shang Tinghua's cuttingly, the warning clear in them. "If I find out you've deceived me, you'll spend the rest of your life in such agony that you'll wish you were never born."
Shang Tinghua scrambled back, still clutching at his throat and wheezing, eyes wide, already nodding his head frantically. Of course, this servant wouldn't dare.
Mulbeidun had just made a low noise of scorn and turned away, stepping back. The tip had panned out. There was a mirror in the Radiant Knight Demon's Head's office. And behind it, there was a ledger, and in that ledger was exactly the details of every illicit transaction and alliance that the Solstice Demon clans had made for the last 3 generations. And with it in hand, Mulbeidun had been able to meet the clan head's eyes and smirk as the gloating expression on his face slowly flattened and turned pale, realizing what was in Mulbeidun's hand. The warriors that had been carefully hidden around the meeting place had hastily drawn back at their clan heads' urgent gesturing, and the rest of the meeting had been spent sitting there in satisfaction as the demon groveled at his feet, begging that Mulbeidun not bring the ledger before his father. Mulbeidun had walked away with a trade agreement that brought him 3 times its previous rate of income, with additional personal tariffs to be paid as bribes directly into his personal treasury, and a book of blackmail that would keep the Solstice Demon clans firmly under his thumb until the day their line died out. The tip had panned out. It had more than panned out. And that's the problem with Shang Tinghua, because all of his tips pan out. He wails and he blubbers and he pleads, but when Mulbeidun shakes him hard enough, priceless information falls out. Information about Lin Guantun's plans, the betrayals panning out between the demon clans, who's a spy, who's trying to poison who, the intricacies and secret dealings of the cultivation sects, herbs and remedies and poisons and cures, some so rare that even the library of the palace doesn't have them in their records, and never once, never once, does Mulbeidun manage to get Shang Tinghua to admit where he learns it. Every time he tries, Shang Tinghua will just blubber and wail and grovel, and then he'll throw out some other crucial tidbit that will snag Mulbeidun's attention, and it will only be weeks later when Mulbeidun has another set of would-be assassins bleeding out at his feet that he realizes that Shang Tinghua never told him at all. The problem, Mulbeidun thinks, is that there's no way for Shang Tinghua to know what he does. About medicines and cures and even the secrets of the various sects, maybe. He is a cultivator, after all. It would make sense for them to study such things and know such secrets. Even if Mulbeidun finds it implausible that a mere senior student of a sect would have such a depth of knowledge about intersect blackmail. But about the dealings of the demon realm? Of Lin Guantun? Impossible. Even the most basic of inquiries had been able to confirm that Shang Tinghua wasn't in his uncle's employ, wasn't his spy or informer or agent. Wasn't anyone spy or informer or agent. That no demon has ever even heard of his name, let alone had dealings with him. He's never even been in the demon realm. Mulbeidun's own spy's reports confirming it. Which only makes it all the more puzzling how Shang Tinghua knows so much about the demon realm's dealings. He knows too much, is the thing. No matter what issue Mulbeidun is facing, what challenges that rise against him, Shang Tinghua has a solution, has information, at least, if nothing else. One by one, Mulbeidun's enemies fall before him. Every plot turned against him, snaring around his enemy's own legs while Mulbeidun walks out unscathed, each step bringing with it crucial gains. And in the end, Mulbeidun can't help but begin to wonder. Shang Tinghua knows things. Things he should have no way of knowing. Secrets that are so long buried that no living soul should be able to know them. And in the end,
Mo Beijun can no longer stave off the inevitable truth. A seer, Mo Beijun thinks, feeling the certainty of it settle cold beneath his skin, clicking into place. How Shang Tinghua knows Ning Guanzun's movements, knows the secrets of the sects, of the demons, how he can uncover ancient treasures and panaceas with each wave of his hand, so powerful that entire clans would tear each other to shreds for just the hope of learning of their location. It explains it all. Shang Tinghua sees the future, knows what has yet to come to pass, and that's why he keeps his mouth shut. No matter how Mo Beijun threatens, how badly he beats him, Shang Tinghua keeps his true cards tucked close to his chest, and no wonder. Seers are legendary figures, practically mythic, and the moment the cultivator or demon realms even heard whisper of one, they would pursue Shang Tinghua to the ends of the earth, clapping him in chains and bending him to their service. It would explain it, how Shang Tinghua had known him, how he had known to save him, had known about Ling Guanzun, about Mo Beijun's brother's plots, how he had steered him through every plot since. For such a priceless treasure to have fallen into Mo Beijun's hands by chance, happening to end up in the same place at the same time, others would kill to have Shang Tinghua bound to their service, would murder and maim and go to war for it. They would offer Shang Tinghua any price, any promise, bribes to fulfill any man's wildest desires in the hopes of swaying him to their side. Anything. Everything. Mo Beijun's eyes narrow. Shang Tinghua lets out a yelp of surprise and scrambles back when the portal opens in his chambers, Mo Beijun striding out. He goes to prostrate himself immediately, already blubbering plaintively about how he hadn't known you were going to come, my king, please forgive me. Mo Beijun cuts him off, hand catching Shang Tinghua's chin from where he kneels on the floor, lifting it so that Mo Beijun's eyes can meet his, the blue of his eyes glowing and bright, sharp as shattered glass. You serve me, Mo Beijun tells him, staring down into his eyes, gaze narrow, voice cold and forceful, fingers tightening on his chin, forcing Shang Tinghua to meet his eyes. From now on, forever, for as long as you live, you serve me exclusively. Leave me, try to work for someone else, and I'll hunt you down and skin you alive, understand? Shang Tinghua swallows, mouth hanging open, looking baffled. The look doesn't last long, fear quickly overtaking confusion as the pleading begins. My king, please, this servant would never even dare think of serving anyone else. This servant would never betray you, my king. Mo Beijun's fingers tighten on his skin, making Shang Tinghua gulp, before Mo Beijun makes his grip loosen, thumb coming to stroke Shang Tinghua's jaw as he stares him down. Shang Tinghua's eyes wide and brown and fearful and bewildered. Serve me faithfully. Remain loyal and stay by my side, and you will be treated with the honor you deserve. Mo Beijun tells him, his voice smooth, seductive, still edged with ice. Shang Tinghua had seen Mo Beijun's worth, had known who he was the day he helped save his life, seeing him and choosing him to be the lord he would work beneath, throwing his lot in with him above any other, and Mo Beijun will reward that loyalty. A tool like Shang Tinghua is one you keep close at your side, under thumb, and Mo Beijun would kill him before seeing him enter the service of another. Loyalty will be repaid with loyalty in kind. Betrayal with a vengeance the likes of which will have the heavens and earth shaking. Do you understand? Mo Beijun asks, voice cold and silky, and Shang Tinghua meets his eyes, still looking utterly bewildered, but nods urgently. Mo Beijun releases him, stepping away. Shang Tinghua, almost folding to the floor, his legs giving way beneath him. Mo Beijun pays it no mind. Shang Tinghua will pick himself up again. He always does. Good, Mo Beijun says, meeting his eyes sharply. Now tell no one of this. If you do, I'll kill you. He turns then and steps back through the shadows, leaving Song Tinghua kneeling there on the floor, alone, staring after him open-mouthed. Song Tinghua stares at where the portal has just disappeared, taking his king with it. Song Tinghua's half-finished report on timber prices still lies scattered on the table, a few pages lying on the floor, dislodged when Song Tinghua had scrambled to bow. Barely a minute, his Mo Bei Jun had been there, hitting the room like a strike of lightning before disappearing just as fast, the cold points on Song Tinghua's face where his king had grabbed him still aching. His mouth opens and then closes again, and then...
What?
Song Tinghua asks the room despairingly, still kneeling there in shock. His voice hits a note almost like a wail.
What did I even do?
Mo Bei Jun's second brother falls first, and then the third, and finally the first. Mo Bei Jun, the unnamed youngest son, bastard of the king's concubine, becomes Mo Bei Jun, Lord King of the Northern Desert, final heir and contender for the throne, and at some point during it all, Shang Tinghua becomes Lord of Anding Peak. Not once do Shang Tinghua's tip-offs lead him astray, and in the wake of it, Mo Bei Jun's enemies fall like dominoes. Shang Tinghua is his most loyal informant, the ace up his sleeve, and in return, Mo Bei Jun guards the secret of his existence jealously, letting not a single other soul know so much as to learn his name. Years. Years. And Mo Bei Jun becomes king, and Lin Guanjun dies at the end of his sword, gasping as he bleeds out on the ice, fury in eyes, outrage as he curses and spits and howls, wondering how it got to this point, how all his plans went so wrong.
Some things are merely fate, Mo Bei Jun replies coldly, with a cruel twist to the curve of his lips, a secret irony just for him,
as he brings his blade down and takes Lin Guanjun's head off his shoulders, blue blood spattering across the ice. Then, only then, when Lin Guanjun is dead, and the rest of Mo Bei Jun's clan, too, and Mo Bei Jun is the sole remaining uncontested king, does Mo Bei Jun allow Shang Tinghua to set foot in the Northern Palace, joining Mo Bei Jun's employ properly. Finally.
A spy, Mo Bei Jun says coldly, when one of his court dares to question him on the presence of the human wandering in their midst. His use is worth more to me than any single one of you. Touch him and die.
That makes the minor demon lord swallow thickly and bow, retreating a step back, the rest of the court following suit. No one dares question it again. The court eventually grows accustomed to the presence of the mousy cultivator that scuttles through the halls of the palace, squeaking whenever someone glances his way. And while his presence never becomes entirely unremarked upon, the minor demons at least seem to have fun prodding reactions out of him, Shang Tinghua's cowardliness making it too easy for them. At the very least, no one seeks to overtly question his purpose again. Informant is his role technically. Nothing more than a lowly spy, though Mo Bei Jun summons him to the palace to give his insights these days rather than visiting him instead. It's only years in, when Mo Bei Jun's power has grown by leaps and bounds and the Northern Desert is richer and more powerful and more influential than it has ever been, the machines of its governance running like a well-oiled machine, that Mo Bei Jun realizes Shang Tinghua is his primary and most trusted advisor, beyond even the tips that his foresight can provide. Shang Tinghua, beyond having a godly insight into the weaving fortunes of the future, is also uniquely gifted at logistics, economics, and political engineering, helping to consolidate and strengthen Mo Bei Jun's rule of the Northern Kingdoms with a speed and strength that beggars description. There has never been less strife in the Demon Court. The sheer stability of Mo Bei Jun's position and alliances an unshakable bedrock, and all because of one man. Mo Bei Jun isn't the only one to realize it, the members of his court having quickly learned who it was who truly had the king's ear, able to sense the direction the wind was blowing. Which is, of course, why someone tries to have Shang Tsinghua assassinated. Mo Beijun deals with this attempt easily, not even batting an eye, slaughtering the assassin and the noble behind it, Shang Tsinghua not even learning of the attempt. But still, it makes Mo Beijun think. The secret of Shang Tsinghua's true nature is one that has been closely kept, not spoken aloud even between the two of them. But even without it, it is clear to the demons of the Northern Realms what sway Shang Tsinghua has and how vital a role he's played in the growth of Mo Beijun's kingdom. For his use as an advisor alone, he's a valuable resource. It wouldn't do for anyone to think they can get away with trying to poach him. So Mo Beijun promotes him, and then, for good measure, promotes him again, making him his official advisor and assistant, and head of palace affairs while he's at it. "Take care of these as well," Mo Beijun tells him, even as another snake-headed demon trots into the room, the latest in a long line depositing a stack of paperwork on the growing mountain on the desk. Shang Tsinghua's burgeoning questions about why his office had been moved immediately cut off in favor of plaintive griping complaints about the unfairness of being forced to deal with all the paperwork. "My king, why?" Shang Tsinghua whines, blubbering about how much paperwork he already has to deal with, and, "I already have to do all the filing for the entirety of Songtsong Mountain," until Mo Beijun shoots him a stern look, at which point Shang Tsinghua immediately dives for his desk chair and takes up his pen, making a show of how pleased and busy he is dealing with all his new paperwork. And there, Mo Beijun thinks with satisfaction, that will make any of the demons think twice about being able to poach him now, knowing they'll be incurring Mo Beijun's own wrath to steal his advisor out from under him. Let them see what happens if they fucking try. Then the conference happens, and all the fallout it entails, and Shang Tsinghua's place is cemented at his side once and for all. After all, if Shang Tsinghua truly is willing to betray his own sect to Mo Beijun, there can be no greater tie on his loyalty than Mo Beijun himself. It's the final test, the final confirmation, and Shang Tsinghua doesn't even hesitate. "I have him then," Mo Beijun thinks with satisfaction, watching Shang Tsinghua where he kneels on the floor before Mo Beijun's throne. Even if Shang Tsinghua wears his sect's robes, wears the Peak Lord's crown, he is Mo Beijun's man through and through. This is the final proof of it. And what fools, Mo Beijun thinks, for that Songtong Mountain sect not to have realized the treasure that was in their hands, taking gold for common copper. And sure, looking at Shang Tsinghua, you would not think he was anything too special, too loud, too nervous, too talkative, weak-spined and loud with it. But Mo Beijun knows better, and the Songtong Mountain sect's loss is his gain. By the time they realize exactly how much it is they've lost, they'll have nothing left to do but cry over it. "The preparations are in place," Mo Beijun asks on the final day before the invasion is due, demon clans from all over the Northern Realms gathering tributes to be sent through the portals, monsters that will carve through the rising ranks of the cultivation world. Shang Tsinghua stands beside him, the last time he will be able to slip away before the attack is over. Shang Tsinghua nods his head in agreement, though Mo Beijun already knows the answer himself well enough. "No second thoughts," Mo Beijun asks, eyes falling to him coldly, and Shang Tsinghua swallows, but he dips his head, and for once his voice is almost steady when he replies. "None, my king," Shang Tsinghua says, head bowed obediently, and Mo Beijun thinks, good. If turning against his own sect isn't enough to turn Shang Tsinghua against him, then Mo Beijun has him. No other force in the world enough to challenge Shang Tsinghua's loyalty to him. He is Mo Beijun's, once and for all, and that is enough to make the whole annoyance of organizing the invasion worth it. The invasion itself, of course, ends up more complicated than Mo Beijun had anticipated, the effects of it rippling out to impact the whole of the demon realm. The cultivator child, the heavenly demon bastard, Luo Bingha, He is of little concern while he's trapped in the abyss. Mo Beijun, able to happily ignore his existence for the 3 years he spends trapped there. Then he gets out, and that's when things get really complicated. When the dust settles, Mo Beijun is forced to come to terms with the fact that he's not going to get to be the absolute ruler of the demon realm himself after all, but rather the lieutenant king to a different emperor instead. Which, in itself, wouldn't be an insult. Luo Binghe has proven himself stronger in the end, and that was all there was to it. Except that Luo Binghe is so gratingly, blindingly annoying that Mo Beijun can't help but be slightly irritated at himself for having lost. 4 months, Luo Binghe spends living in the Northern Palace as he consolidates his rule on the surrounding demon realms. And in that time, Mo Beijun spends more than enough time learning what it is that makes him tick. Shizun this, Shizun that, Shizun, Shizun, Shizun. He's so clearly stupidly infatuated with the Qingqing Peak Lord that it makes Mo Beijun scoff. Taking up with a human? Pathetic. Luo Binghe is powerful and cunning, so devious a tactician that Mo Beijun will follow him gladly for the rest of his days, his realm only growing all the stronger for it. But the less he hears about his lord's love life, the better. Some things, Mo Beijun thinks, are better off just not being said. Even after Luo Binghe takes control of the demon realm and makes his return to the human realm, with all the chaos that ensues, Mo Beijun's opinion does not change. Until one day it does. The precipitating incident is an attempted coup. Mo Beijun has one of the most stable courts of any demon lord in history, but that still means that every couple of months a minor clan or puffed-up overconfident idiot plots to try and overthrow him. Most are handled without even a blink. Mo Beijun strong enough to cut down any challengers who might even think to look his way. Is when people get smart that things get risky. The Eastern Fire Demon's plot would have proven catastrophic had it come to fruit, tearing Mo Beijun's kingdom apart and wreaking such damage that not even the best of his intervention would have been able to keep the seat of his power from fracturing beneath his feet. Mo Beijun watches Song Qinghua as he gives his report to the whole thing, detailing the series of events one by one and the 17 separate minor interventions Song Qinghua had to make the plot crack open like an egg, organizing the Fire Demon Clan head to get caught in his own web and end up at war with his own allies instead, allies who have since made their own alliances with Mo Beijun's court instead, bringing with them gladly all the gifts of trade the Eastern Fire Demon had hoped to use as bait for his trap. But of course you knew all this, my king. Shang Tsinghua finishes humbly, head ducked, shoulders hunched in like he's half expecting to be punted across the room for even daring to stand this close to Mo Beijun in Mo Beijun's office. And Mo Beijun, who had, in fact, not known of this, who had, in fact, only been vaguely aware that the Fire Demons were probably up to something and that he should probably send some spies to keep an eye on them, just replies, "Hmm." He studies Shang Tsinghua then, gaze sharp with new clarity, and for the first time considers just how much Shang Tsinghua has brought to his rule. He is one of the pillars of Mo Beijun's rule, one of his most trusted and loyal followers, and one of the underlying driving forces that has made Mo Beijun not merely a powerful demon, but a king second only to the most powerful demon in the world. Everything Mo Beijun does, every advancement he makes, every victory that falls at his kingdom's feet, at his feet, has Shang Tsinghua's fingers behind it, his influence spreading like a spiderweb that touches every aspect of Mo Beijun's rule. My king, is something wrong? You're sort of staring at me, Shang Tsinghua says, becoming increasingly nervous and fidgety beneath the prolonged weight of Mo Beijun's gaze. Mo Beijun stares at him thoughtfully, not replying even as Shang Tsinghua grows increasingly anxious. Shang Tsinghua is loyal and strong, and smarter than most people would even imagine. He's healed Mo Beijun more than once, saving his life time and time again, sometimes even at risk to his own, and there was no other being in the world that Molbe Jun has ever let see him in such states of vulnerability. Shang Tinghua, the only one tolerated to be in Molbe Jun's presence when he's wounded or weakened. It stirs something in Molbe Jun. The sight of Shang Tinghua brings out a possessiveness in him, a satisfaction. There is nothing that feels quite so right in the world than the sight of it, Shang Tinghua standing beside him, Shang Tinghua kneeling before his throne. Molbe Jun mulls over the thought for the next 2 weeks, before another incident finally spurs him into action. The remaining fire demon representatives have been agreeable. Too agreeable. And watching one of their ambassadors flash their fangs at Shang Tinghua and curl their tail invitingly in his direction is the final straw. Molbe Jun won't tolerate anyone looking at Shang Tinghua and thinking that he is anything other than Molbe Jun's. And the fact that people's eyes have begun to wander where they are not permitted is proof enough that Molbe Jun has been too complacent.
My king, the negotiations were finally starting to get somewhere and you had to kill the only reasonable one of the lot?
Shang Tinghua wails in the aftermath, looking about ready to begin tearing out his own hair as he paces back and forth in Molbe Jun's office.
Now we'll be lucky if this ends with anything less than war. The trade routes through the Broken Kiln are going to be a mess. Really, what did he even do?
He dared desire you, Molbe Jun thinks coldly, but can't say that. So instead, he just makes a sharp noise, eyes cutting to Shang Tinghua, voice cold and dismissive.
He was annoying.
That sets Shang Tinghua off all over again, embarking on a wailing rant as he chews Molbe Jun out, cursing about how he's going to have to smooth over relations with at least 9 separate clans just to make this work. Molbe Jun lets him waffle, barely listening to a word, staring at Shang Tinghua instead, thinking. Maybe Molbe Jun has been complacent. It would not do, after all, for any old trash to simply think they can come over and covet what is Molbe Jun's. Perhaps a more permanent message is needed. He makes Shang Tinghua his consort. He announces his hunt, spends 3 weeks tracing down one of the Leviathan gold-scaled dragons of the Broken Mountains, and then drops its head at Shang Tinghua's feet in front of the entire court, ordering for the rest of its meat to be butchered and prepared, putting the first bite onto Shang Tinghua's plate himself. The court watches, wide-eyed and rapt, as Shang Tinghua slices it up and takes the first bite, not even pausing in his whining rant about the draft that has appeared in his office and,
oh, my king, the new trade agreements are causing so much paperwork. Why did I even decide it was a good idea to review the tariffs? My king, are you even listening?
Molbe Jun replies, inclining his head minutely, before he turns his eyes back to the court, gliding along the crowd and meeting the eyes of every clan head one by one, watching them pale and drop their gazes, ensuring the message has sunken in. The ritual is an older iteration, obscure and largely forgotten, claiming a legendary hunt and presenting it for his consort, but it gets the point across. The only way for Molbe Jun to make it any clearer would be for him to push Shang Tinghua down onto the table and fuck him in front of the court then and there, as the more recent claiming ritual would dictate. Shang Tinghua would make a fuss if he did, though, and Molbe Jun can't be bothered to listen to him whine, so a legendary hunt is the easier way to go about it. He sees the understanding in the eyes of enough of his court to know that the news still spread. Good.
Wear this,
Molbe Jun tells Shang Tinghua the next day, cornering him before he can make his way out of his rooms and tossing the necklace at him. It's an ornate thing, all spellbound silver and shining sapphires, imbued with Molbe Jun's own magic and woven through with sigils of his house. It's a claiming piece, the token proof of Molbe Jun's favor and regard, marking Shang Tinghua as his, any who see it knowing exactly who Shang Tinghua belongs to and why. Shang Tinghua almost fumbles it, caught off guard, the chains of delicate silver chiming as they slither over his fingers.
What? Wait, my king, surely this is too fine for this servant.
My advisor shouldn't be dressed so shabbily,
Mulbejun replies curtly, and glares at Shang Tsinghua until he quails and puts it on, fingers fumbling a little as he clasps the necklace on over the collar of his robes, letting it hang across his chest, jewels glinting like a constellation of stars. The sight of it, of Mulbejun's colors on him, of Mulbejun's magic on him, brings such a visceral sense of satisfaction that it makes something in him heat.
Good,
Mulbejun tells him, voice pleased and sharp.
Now don't take it off.
Shang Tsinghua's mouth drops open, and he makes a noise like he's desperate to question it, but a sharp look from Mulbejun has his jaw snapping shut. Shang Tsinghua nipping any questions in the bud, falling over himself to assure Mulbejun he'll do just that.
I'll wear it every day, my king, I promise. Of course I would cherish a gift for my king, do not doubt it. I'll wear it with the highest honor.
He is true to his word, and after the first glance Mulbejun gives him when he spots Shang Tsinghua about to wander out of his room without it, Shang Tsinghua is never seen without it. He walks through Mulbejun's court, wearing his colors, his claim, for all to see, and not a single person that visits his realm does not know Shang Tsinghua for what he is, Mulbejun's. Not a single creature dares to make eyes at him after that. Apart from Shang Tsinghua having technically gotten another promotion in status, more demons bow to him in the halls these days, not that he even seems to notice. Not much else changes. Shang Tsinghua continues to serve as Mulbejun's advisor, continues to manage the affairs of the palace, continues to eat at Mulbejun's side, work at Mulbejun's side, be the only one permitted to see and treat Mulbejun when he is wounded. In hindsight, Mulbejun supposes that half the palace already suspected that Shang Tsinghua was serving as his consort, Mulbejun allowing no other living creature even a fraction of the liberties he allows Shang Tsinghua, Shang Tsinghua occupying a unique position in Mulbejun's court. The demons of his court had known well to tread carefully around Shang Tsinghua, but now even guests will know better than to think they can dismiss him, or worse, covet him. Mulbejun is content. Shang Tsinghua is his, and everyone knows it. Then, of course, there is the anniversary of Luo Bingha and Chen Xingqiu's marriage, an ostentatious week-long festival of celebrations that Mulbejun cannot refuse to attend, that no one can refuse to attend, on pain of Luo Bingha tracking them down and parting their head from their body in punishment for not being sufficiently jubilant in celebrating his marriage to his esteemed Shuzun. It does not help that Shang Tsinghua somehow seems to be actually a friend of Shen Xingqiu's, for which reason alone Mulbejun would likely be obligated to attend anyway. The celebrations themselves are about what Mulbejun expected, lavish, expensive, utterly over the top. Luo Bingha and his bridegroom making an appearance for only a fraction of the celebrations, for all that Luo Bingha orders them to go for a week anyway. Demon clans have gathered from all over the demon realm to bring tribute and celebration, bringing with them food and wine, setting a scene of lavish feasts that barely ceases the entire 7 days, wine flowing like water and the scent of spice and roasting meat a heady perfume over the entire imperial city, the music never pausing. There are worse things, Mulbejun thinks, than spending a week drinking wine and supping from the demon realm's most lavish feasts. Which makes it all the stranger that partway through the first evening of feasting, Shang Tsinghua's mood takes a turn for the quiet and melancholic. Melancholic isn't a strange mood for Shang Tsinghua. He is a dramatic creature by nature, unable to help himself, but even in the pits of misery and despair, he's relentlessly loud with it, wailing and complaining and muttering to himself. He talks constantly, continuously, only growing louder in happiness or in misery, which makes it all the more alarming when they get halfway through the fourth course of the night and Mulbejun realizes Shang Tsinghua has barely spoken a word for the last 15 minutes. It's enough to get Mulbejun eyeing him, gaze sharp and thoughtful, and when even waving for one of the servants to refill Shang Tsinghua's cup and bring a whole new assortment of dishes does nothing more than earn a quiet, oh, As Shang Qinghua shuffles his plate a little to the side to make room, Mo Beijun knows that something is seriously wrong. The next hour of observation brings no answer. Changes in the food, in the wine, in the music, even in the company sitting around them brings no change. Shang Qinghua just as mute and subdued as before. No assassination attempts have been made, no coups attempted, no new trade routes whose paperwork might overwhelm Shang Qinghua's desk. And if anything had happened on Shang Qinghua's last visit to Songqiong Mountain, then it's taken a week for him to start feeling distressed about it. It's only at the end of the feast, when the compulsory courses have been finished and the guests are once more free to come and go, or take the air as they please, Mo Beijun and Shang Qinghua stepping out onto one of the balconies to take air, that Mo Beijun learns what the problem is. The celebrations are in full swing in the streets of the city, crowds pressed right up to the walls of the palace, and the courtyards of the palace are no less packed. Strings of lanterns and burning bonfires lighting up the city in glowing lines. Demons and humans alike are mingling in the streets, music loud and laughter louder, more than a few happy couples making their affections known in the streets in honor of their demon overlord and his immortal bridegroom. Shang Qinghua takes one look at one of the couples frolicking together in the streets and lets out a long sigh, leaning against the rail of the balcony, head hung. It's the first moment of peace they've had since the feast started, and Shang Qinghua's mood took a turn, and Mo Beijun's patience finally runs short.
"You've been out of sorts,"
Mo Beijun says, narrowing his eyes at Shang Qinghua, the words almost coming with the clipped sharpness of accusation. Shang Qinghua just lets out another long sigh, slumped against the rail, fingers trailing over the ornate woodwork, gaze fixed on the crowd below. It's always an interesting thing to see, when Shang Qinghua forgets himself enough that he forgets to be cowardly, distracted from his instinct to grovel. There's a depth to him in those moments, usually hidden by the loud noise of his fear and anxiety.
My king, do you think I'll ever get married?
Shang Qinghua asks, voice quiet and almost wistful, hands finding a carved whorl in the balcony railing and stilling there.
Just seeing Shen Shixiong and Lord Luo so happy, it makes you think, you know, if there's anyone out there who would ever... But I'm being silly. Who would ever marry me after all?
He lets out a little laugh then, shaking his head, seeming to catch himself.
My king, I'm sorry. This servant is wasting your time with his useless chatter. There's more wine, right? Did you still want to eat more?
Shang Qinghua chivvies them back into the hall after that, making back for their seat at the feast. But Mo Beijun's eyes linger on him, narrowed. That Shang Qinghua feels unworthy and below notice, thinking no one would ever value him enough to marry him.
Unacceptable.
It's a simple thing in the end, to appoint Shang Qinghua from consort to first wife, and crown him as the chosen empress of the northern realms. Shang Qinghua feared that no one would see his value, and so Mo Beijun makes every effort to shower him in honors and gifts. Monsters of lore slain and presented as tribute, the finest jewels and cloth that the northern demon realms can produce sewn to clothe him, dressing him in the robes of his station and giving him the responsibilities to match. The duties of a reigning queen, and with them the highest honors Mo Beijun can afford. The actual ceremony of appointment itself is as simple as swapping out the jewels Shang Qinghua had been wearing around his neck, replacing his consort necklace with an even grander one, and killing any members of his court who come forward during the official period of contestation to try and challenge the match. They die, Shang Qinghua accepts the new necklace with barely a blink, and at the end of it, the northern demon realms find themselves with a new queen. To tell the truth, Shang Qinghua managed much of the duties already. He is Mo Beijun's advisor, his aide, the head of his household, the first body to which Mo Beijun's servants and court turn when Mo Beijun himself is unavailable, and making Shang Qinghua his queen only makes it official. Shang Qinghua doesn't seem to notice the slight increase in paperwork, nor does he comment on the increased amount of legendary beast heads that are trotted out during feasts for him to marvel at, each one slain in his honor by Mulbei Jun's own hand. The only thing Shang Qinghua seems to notice is the change in robes, making a great whining fuss when Mulbei Jun glares at him when he tries to keep wearing his Songqiong mountain robes.
"But my king, these are..."
Shang Qinghua protests, holding the silken robes in hand, only for his mouth to snap shut when Mulbei Jun sends him a look. He puts them on in the end, though he complains all the while, and Mulbei Jun has to swallow back the searing sense of satisfaction he feels, watching Shang Qinghua walk through the halls of the palace, wearing the robes of a proper demon empress, not a single person in the demon realm able to look at him and question what his role is at Mulbei Jun's side. He has a throne constructed next to his own, though lesser in stature, for Shang Qinghua to sit at during meetings of the court. And when Mulbei Jun looks at him there, sitting there in the blue and gold of the empress, resplendent and beautiful as he chews out some minor noble for inconsistencies in their tax reports, not even seeming to notice how the rest of the demons are keeping their heads demurely bowed, and thinks, "Yes, this is how it should be." When Shang Qinghua bursts in through the door of the bamboo house, Shen Xingqiu takes one look at him and starts laughing.
"Don't start,"
Shang Qinghua says, even as Shen Xingqiu laughs so hard he's almost doubled over, fan still held in front of his face as if it will be enough to hide it.
"Cucumber bro, you have no idea how difficult it is being in a demon court. This is their formal wear, you know. I don't have a choice."
Shang Qinghua looks ridiculous, and he knows it. The robes are made of dark blue silk, so sheer in places it's almost transparent, stitched through with swirling lines of golden embroidery, and the concept of layering has been entirely lost, the tight and formal layers favored by the human realm replaced by the shining jewels and revealing cuts of the demon realm, all open skin and shimmering tantalizing silk. Shang Qinghua looks like something that just stepped out of a harem story, so much jewelry glinting on him right now that he actually jingles when he walks. He has so much skin on display that he blushes whenever he looks in the mirror, and the rest is barely covered by the skimpy silks Mulbei Jun keeps glaring him into wearing. And the worst part is, Shang Qinghua can't even complain that wearing them is cold as an excuse to get out of wearing them, since they're so fucking spelled to hell and back that Shang Qinghua is honestly warmer wandering around in them than he had been in his own Anding Peak Lord robes.
"You were the one who wrote it,"
Shen Qingqiu says, once he finally stops laughing enough to speak, which just makes Shang Qinghua moan and slump down into a nearby chair.
"I know, but I didn't think I would be the one forced to wear it. You know, it seemed like a much better idea when I was thinking about it. All those bishi demons and hot ladies. It's a look, you know,"
Shang Qinghua says, slumping into his seat pathetically, waving one hand.
"I tried to wear my peak lord robes, but Mulbei Jun looked like he was going to run me through with his sword. Says that I'm a representative of his court and I have to dress appropriately."
"Appropriately," Shen Qingqiu says dryly, expression incredulous. Shang Qinghua blushes, scrubbing his hands over his face, halfway between mortified and annoyed, slouching even further into his seat, ruthlessly ignoring the way all of his bangles and chains jingle as he does.
I know, it wasn't my best idea."
Shen Qingqiu sends him a flat look, that's all. "Oh, really?" But Shang Qinghua doesn't pay attention, too caught up in complaining.
"You'd think if he was going to force people to dress up like dancing girls, then he'd get someone else to do it. You have no idea, Cucumber Bro. These things are so annoying to put on, but at least it's warm. The first time I saw one, I thought I was going to freeze my balls off and..."
And then, do you know what he said? He said he was planning on expanding some of the student dormitories on the mountain so that he can take on more students.
I don't even know where Shen Shixiong finds the time.
Song Tsinghua says, stabbing at the tray of meat with his chopsticks and popping a piece in his mouth, chewing furiously.
I can barely keep up with my sect duties, and all of my students take care of themselves.
Mo Beijun lets out a hum at that, and Song Tsinghua nods his head sharply, waving his chopsticks.
And then, of course, Liu Qingge came stomping into my office just as soon as I'd settled down. So that was when I had to sort him out as well, which meant I had to cram all of my paperwork in after it.
Song Tsinghua keeps going, chattering on at full steam, pausing only for Mo Beijun to nod and nudge some more of the dishes in his direction. Song Tsinghua always has a lot to say whenever he comes back from the peaks. He always has a lot to say whenever he comes back from anywhere, and Mo Beijun is happy to listen. Song Tsinghua doesn't really want a response so much as a willing ear, which works out well enough because Mo Beijun rarely has anything to say anyway.
And it was well past midnight before I even finished with the most important reports. I swear, my king, if I find out that the Sylvan demons have messed up something in the tariff agreements and left me with even more paperwork, I'm going to scream. I really will.
The Sylvan demons, fortunately, don't fuck up their tariff reports, which is just as well because Mo Beijun would have taken their heads off if they had made Chang Tsinghua lose even another minute's sleep. The next few days of court are blessedly calm, once the small hump of paperwork that has accumulated in Chang Tsinghua's absence is resolved. And Mo Beijun supposes that should have been warning enough. A demon court is never calm. The incident happens during what ought to be a routine alliance agreement. A middlingly powerful clan of water demons from the far edges of Mulbejun's expanding territory, taking the initiative to come to him themselves and offer their service, hoping that by doing so, they'll be able to get a better deal than when his people inevitably stomp over their border and claim their lands in his name anyway. The clan themselves is of little note, save for a reputation for forging fine blades, prestigious enough that when they send their envoy to his court, they actually assemble a procession for it, bringing with them a stream of gifts to help grease the way. It's enough that Mo Beijun allows them an actual audience, letting their envoys before his court to make their case and propose a proper deal, which all goes well enough until they start offering up one of their daughters as a bride. The eldest daughter of the He clan would make a fine second wife for any man capable of bearing many powerful sons. Song Tsinghua looks sour at his side, but he's nodding along faintly. Mo Beijun can hear him muttering beneath his breath. Suppose at some point it had to happen. Then he catches up with what was actually said and blinks.
Wait, a second wife? Who's your first?
The throne room is quiet enough to hear a pin drop, every member of the court staring at Song Tsinghua where he sits there, on a throne beside Mo Beijun, glittering in the fine vestments of the Queen Empress and dripping with so much jewelry branded with Mo Beijun's own demonic seal that you could mug him to pay off the debts of a small kingdom. Song Tsinghua just looks increasingly bewildered, glancing around, and the water demon bowing at the foot of the throne actually hazards to clear their throat hesitantly, still agonizing over the answer to their proposal.
Enough's enough, Mo Beijun decides. I won't be taking a second wife, Mo Beijun says curtly, eyes fixing on the demon, gaze warning what will happen if he dares try protest. The rest of the proposal is adequate. It will go ahead, and your lands will be given my seal of protection, as they're absorbed, with tax rates to be negotiated at a further date.
My king is too generous. The water demon bows, and sometime in the intervening seconds, something seems to finally click with Song Tsinghua, because his mouth has fallen open, eyes wide, face going pale.
Wait, what?
Mo Beijun just rolls his eyes, a sharp flick of his hand dismissing the court, who bow and quickly begin to sweep away, even as Mo Beijun rises from his throne and strides from the room, making back for his chambers. He hears Song Tsinghua scramble behind him, jewelry jingling as he hurries to catch up.
Wait, wait, with my king!
Mo Beijun barely makes it a step into his chambers before Shang Tsinghua is bursting in after him, eyes wild. He stares at Mo Beijun, opens his mouth, closes it again, opens it again, and...
My king, what? They just... Did you really... Are we married?
His voice takes on a slightly hysterical tone then, high and shocked. Mo Beijun just shoots him a flat look.
Was it not clear enough?
Mo Beijun asks. Because really, what does Shang Tsinghua think he's been doing all this time? Mo Beijun doesn't hunt legendary monsters just for anybody else. Doesn't give anyone else the sigil of his house. Doesn't feed anyone else, dress anyone else, fight challenges and win duels in the honor of anyone else. Any other demon would have fallen over themselves by now with the sheer lavish attention Mo Beijun bestows on Shang Tsinghua. But then, Shang Tsinghua is a human. Mo Beijun does recall something about them maybe doing things slightly differently. Fine, if Shang Tsinghua wants him to be clear, Mo Beijun will be clear. Mo Beijun crosses the space between them in two long strides, fingers catching Shang Tsinghua's chin and tilting it up, claiming his mouth in a hungry kiss. Shang Tsinghua makes a noise of shock, mouth slipping open, and then Mo Beijun's tongue is in his mouth, deepening the kiss as he takes him like that, deep and wet and filthy, claiming every inch of him, until Shang Tsinghua's hands are clenching at his shoulders, gasping, letting out a little noise, a breathless moan, as Mo Beijun just kisses him deeper. One step back, two, and Shang Tsinghua falls to sprawl across the bed, staring up at him with wide, dazed eyes. Breath gone panting, and a flush red across his face.
Do you think I would just let anyone sit beside me? Just let anyone wear my magic, the sigils of my house, wear my mark?
Mo Beijun asks, voice low and smooth and dark. The two of them barely inches apart. Mo Beijun's fingers coming to stroke the line of the necklaces that drape across Shang Tsinghua's neck, over the bare panes of his chest, resting first on the gleaming sapphires, then on the intricate chains of the necklaces themselves.
Is it not enough?
Mo Beijun says, voice low and sultry,
that I fought for you and claimed you in front of my entire court. Should I have married you that way too? Hunted you down and dragged you there, right into the center of the throne room and fucked you in front of them?
That makes Shang Tsinghua wheeze, face flushed red, even the tips of his ears. The sight is too enticing. Mo Beijun leans back down, steeling his lips again. His mouth is so warm, so hot, so slick and wet, and Mo Beijun kisses Shang Tsinghua until he's breathless, and then kisses him some more, wet and deep and filthy, devouring every part of him. When he draws back, Shang Tsinghua is flushed and breathing hard. Mo Beijun's satisfaction is a vicious, predatory thing, turning his head just enough to murmur in Shang Tsinghua's ear,
I still could, you know.
Shang Tsinghua jerks, making a noise like a dying creature, hands snapping up to cover his face.
My king,
Shang Tsinghua wheezes, voice strangled before taking in a deep, gasping breath. Another breath, more tentative, as if still warring with his own disbelief, before he speaks, voice almost soft.
You really would? With me? I didn't think you...
He trails off then, lost. I didn't think you cared for me. I didn't think you wanted me.
He didn't know,
Mo Beijun realizes, and feels his eyes narrow. Shang Tsinghua really didn't know. He's spent long enough around demons now that Mo Beijun had assumed he would at least catch some of the implications of what Mo Beijun did for him. A mistake. He should have known better than to assume. For the smartest person Mo Beijun knows, Shang Tsinghua can be remarkably dense.
Shang Qinghua hadn't realized that Mo Beijun held him in affection, that he'd claimed him, made him his, married him.
"Then let me make it clear now,"
Mo Beijun says, voice coming with the unarguable edge of command. A promise, low and smooth, leans down then, stealing Shang Qinghua's mouth even as he closes the distance, a leg slipping between Shang Qinghua's, his intentions clear. If Shang Qinghua doubts his affections, Mo Beijun will demonstrate them in the most physical way possible and let that be proof. Mo Beijun will take him, and he'll take him hard, and Shang Qinghua can try to doubt then who he belongs to.
Wait.
Shang Qinghua yelps. Mo Beijun almost receiving an elbow to the face as Shang Qinghua starts wriggling.
My king, wait.
Mo Beijun draws back, putting a few inches of space between them, his eyes narrowing.
Do you not desire me?
Oh my god.
Shang Qinghua covers his face with his hands, his cheeks flushed a furious red, mortified. His voice is high and sort of squeaky, coming almost in a wail.
Of course I do. Have you even looked at yourself? You are literally out of my dreams. I've been panting over you since the moment we first met. I just didn't think you'd be interested in me.
That makes Mo Beijun narrow his eyes. If the problem isn't that Shang Qinghua isn't interested, but rather that he doubts Mo Beijun's interest, the solution is clear. Mo Beijun catches Shang Qinghua's wrists, pinning his hands beside his face, and looking him right in the eye. Shang Qinghua's face is still red and mortified, eyes wide.
I'm going to fuck you until you can't walk,
Mo Beijun promises, voice low and silky, eyes fixed on his gaze so sharp it's glowing, their faces only inches apart.
And then tomorrow, I'll do it again. And then the next day, and then the next, every single day until you forget what it feels like not to be mine. Is that demonstration enough?
Shang Qinghua swallows thickly, mouth open, and closes his mouth, clearing his throat, his face tomato red.
Yeah, it is,
he squeaks. And even Mo Beijun can feel the way Shang Qinghua is hard and aching against Mo Beijun's thigh. As he has been almost since the moment Mo Beijun shoved him down onto the bed.
Good,
Mo Beijun says shortly. And then he's kissing Shang Qinghua, claiming his mouth in a brutal kiss, deep and ravenous. Shang Qinghua's hands clutch at his shoulders, clenching in the fur of Mo Beijun's cloak. Breathless noises stolen from his mouth, low and gasping, as Mo Beijun kisses him until he's desperate for breath. Draws back, hearing Shang Qinghua pant, his eyes gone hazy, just to set his mouth to his neck instead, pressing biting kisses down the pale slope of his neck.
Holy shit!
Shang Qinghua gasps, head thrown back.
Oh my god! Holy fucking shit, I can't believe this is happening.
He gasps as Mo Beijun's mouth finds his collarbone, then down, shoving aside the wispy fabric of his robes until he can mouth at one nipple, making Shang Qinghua's whole body jerk, hands clenching in the mantle of Mo Beijun's cloak.
Holy fuck.
Loud, Mo Beijun thinks, and is almost surprised by how much pleasure the thought brings. Shang Qinghua can't seem to help himself, words spilling out of his mouth of their own accord, winding and rambling, only to be cut off by whines and keening noises, and curses as Mo Beijun teases at the skin, finally giving it a nip that makes Shang Qinghua's whole body jerk.
Fuck!
Mo Beijun grinds forward there, shoving Shang Qinghua's leg out of the way enough that he can align his hips to his and grind down, letting Shang Qinghua feel every iron inch of him, hard and ready and eager. Shang Qinghua makes a noise of strangled surprise, mouth running,
oh my god, this is really happening. I can't believe this is happening. Holy shit, oh my god.
Shang Qinghua's pants are in the way, and Mo Beijun solves the issue by tearing them off entirely, letting them rip as he tears his claws through them.
Shang Tinghua lets out a loud yelp, moving to jerk his legs together, hands dropping over himself. Shang Tinghua is hard now, skin so pale and pink and warm, flushed red, and even Shang Tinghua's hands can't do much to hide it. Oh my god. Shang Tinghua is wheezing, face flushed red and eyes wild. A little warning, please. You can't just tear a guy's pants off. Mo Beijun sends him a look at that, flat, unimpressed, before leaning down and slapping Shang Tinghua's hands out of the way. Shang Tinghua lets out a squawk, flailing, shouting some complaint or another, only to cut off with a shocked inhale when Mo Beijun finally gets his mouth on him, licking a long line from base to tip before getting his mouth on him properly, not waiting before swallowing him right down. Holy fuck. Shang Tinghua says breathlessly, only to let out a torn moan when Mo Beijun just takes him in deeper, swallowing him down. His eyes are wide, his face agog as he watches Mo Beijun ease him deeper. His hands flutter around Mo Beijun's head anxiously, not daring to touch, before his one hand, tentatively, hesitantly comes to settle in his hair, threading through Mo Beijun's hair. Oh my god. Shang Tinghua says softly, head falling back as Mo Beijun works at him, taking him in deep and swallowing around him, only to draw back, licking up the length of him as he goes. Shang Tinghua gasps, barely keeping back from a restrained twitch of his hips that would leave him fucking into Mo Beijun's throat. Oh my god. Mo Beijun draws off him just enough to glare at him.
Don't move, he says, eyes narrowing. The next bit will be easier if you stay still.
And then Mo Beijun is dropping back down, licking up Shang Tinghua's length and drawing him back into his mouth, even as his hand rises, coming to find the place Shang Tinghua is closed and sealed, sitting tight and waiting. Shang Tinghua tenses a bit when one of Mo Beijun's fingers traces along his entrance, but is distracted again soon enough when Mo Beijun draws him deep into his throat, until Shang Tinghua is bottomed out so deep that he can't go any further, Mo Beijun swallowing around him.
Oh, fuck.
Shang Tinghua breathes, panting, his voice loud.
My king, fuck, you feel so good, huh?
Mo Beijun fucks him like that, slicks his finger and works Shang Tinghua open, swallowing him deep again and again, every time Shang Tinghua threatens to tense. Then drawing back to only lick at the tip, teasing, when Shang Tinghua starts to get too wound up, losing himself, unable to keep from rocking forward with small grinds of his hips, growing bitter on Mo Beijun's tongue with his closeness.
Fuck.
Shang Tinghua breathes.
Fuck, fuck.
After Mo Beijun draws back once more, two fingers inside him now and thrusting in deep, Mo Beijun mouthing up the side of his length before coming to lap right along the slit.
Oh my god.
Shang Tinghua keens, forced to squeeze his eyes shut at the sight, cock twitching. He is panting now, letting out these ragged little noises as Mo Beijun fucks him with his fingers. There's an edge of impatience to Mo Beijun now, a leashed furious hunger that is straining and yanking at that leash. And when Mo Beijun adds a third finger, and Shang Tinghua only moans shamelessly, arching his hips into it, the last thread of Mo Beijun's patience snaps entirely. He tears himself away, shoving Shang Tinghua's legs open, and then Mo Beijun's mouth is on Shang Tinghua's, kissing him hungrily as he lines himself up and presses in. Shang Tinghua gasps against his mouth, hands clenching at Mo Beijun's shoulders, that tight, blistering heat clenching around him. And Mo Beijun swallows the noise down as he presses in, pressing hungrily deeper. He rips his mouth from Shang Tinghua's, kissing at his neck instead, sucking kisses up the column of his throat with a growl, almost halfway in now and still going. Shang Tinghua's head falls backwards and he gasps, letting out a full-bodied moan when Mo Beijun rocks his hips, driving in another sharp half inch.
Oh, fuck,
Shang Tinghua says, breathless.
Fuck, fuck,
Mo Beijun closes the rest of the distance, bottoming out with a snarl, his face pressed into Shang Tinghua's throat,
hands tight on his hips, and then Mo Beijun's mouth is finding Shang Tinghua's, and Shang Tinghua is letting out a moaning gasp as Mo Beijun draws out just enough to rock sharply back in. The heat of it, Shang Tinghua's body so tight and hot around him, searing, so soft, so warm, it's excruciating. It's an addiction, and Mo Beijun draws back out again, thrusting back in deeply. The rhythm of it is addictive. Mo Beijun's mouth finding Shang Tinghua's as he sets up a rhythm, drawing back and thrusting back in smoothly, putting the full power of his hips into it again and again and again, chasing that tight, wet heat, until Shang Tinghua is moaning, breath hitching with every thrust, hands clawing at Mo Beijun's shoulders.
Oh my god, how does that feel so good?
Shang Tinghua moans as Mo Beijun bites a kiss at his shoulder, the next thrust coming hard enough to make the necklaces draped down his chest jerk, letting out a chime.
Fuck. Please, yeah. Like that. Oh my god, like that. My king, my king. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Mo Beijun bites a kiss to Shang Tinghua's neck, just below the hinge of his jaw, thrusting in again sharply, just to hear Shang Tinghua gasp. And then Mo Beijun is turning, hands taking Shang Tinghua lightly by the hips as he rolls, flipping onto his back and pulling Shang Tinghua up on top of him, still sheathed around his cock. Shang Tinghua moans, startled, as the new angle makes him sink right down. He's spread open above Mo Beijun like this now, legs splayed wide, Mo Beijun able to see exactly where they join. Shang Tinghua's own flushed cock hard against his belly and weeping now. Shang Tinghua's robes are a mess, chains of silver and sheer blue silks alike draped down his chest, barely concealing the peak of his nipples, the flush on his skin. Shang Tinghua realizes what a sight he must make, even as Mo Beijun looks at him, because his face flushes red and he lets out a mortified squeak, going tense. My king. Mo Beijun just smirks, hands tightening around Shang Tinghua's hips, lifting him just enough that he'll sink back down, gasping as the new angle pressed Mo Beijun inside him even deeper, sheathing every inch of his cock in him, so hard and hot and unforgiving. Shang Tinghua can't help his moan as it sinks back in, nor the way his legs tried to tighten, face flushing even more. The flush on his face, so exposed, so visible, so mortified, Mo Beijun able to see every inch of him and loving it, only makes it all the more delightful.
Move,
Mo Beijun tells him, voice coming out with the pleased purr of a command, and Shang Tinghua swallows thickly. His eyes drop to himself, hard cock so red and eager, his legs spread wide over Mo Beijun, straddling him, his face only growing redder as he jerks his eyes away again, shoots Mo Beijun a pleading look, which falters again when Mo Beijun meets his eyes with a smirk, making no attempt to move, making it clear that if Shang Tinghua wants to finish this, it's on him. Shang Tinghua draws in a breath at that, biting his lip, so tense now. Then Shang Tinghua's hands find Mo Beijun's front, settling there, and he gives the smallest, slightest, most minute rock, lifting up a fraction of an inch and dropping back down. Moans even at that small press, his cock standing to attention against his belly, so hard now that it's dripping. And even mortified, even flushed, he draws up and does it again. And again. His movements, faltering so hesitant, grow smoother, and then the pleasure does its work, Shang Tinghua's head thrown back, his eyes closed, as he lifts up and grinds back down, fucking himself like that, fucking himself on Mo Beijun's cock, Mo Beijun's hands still warm on his hips. Shang Tinghua is biting his lips, swallowing down the soft that try to wrench themselves from his throat as he sets up a rhythm. His rocking as he rises and then slams back down, chains jingling on his chest, hair spilling around his shoulders.
Louder,
Mo Beijun orders, hands tightening on Shang Tinghua's hips, eyes meeting his, dark and intent.
Let me hear you.
Shang Tinghua flushes all over, but then he's moving again, picking up a faster rhythm, fucking himself on Mo Beijun's cock, soft little noises leaving him every time he sinks down, and then louder,
long, full-bodied moans as he sets up the rhythm again, and then Mulbejun is taking him by the hips and snapping up to meet him, and Shang Tsinghua loses it, spilling back into incoherent pleading broken through with moans.
Oh, fuck, fuck, please.
Mulbejun's hips snap up, hard, meeting him on every thrust, and Shang Tsinghua lets out a strangled noise, voice loud and unrestrained, echoing off the walls.
My king,
Call me by my name,
Mulbejun orders, and Shang Tsinghua moans and does.
Mulbejun, please. Oh my god, fuck. You feel so big, you feel so fucking big. Please, please, more. I'm so close. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Something in Mulbejun snaps, and then Mulbejun has Shang Tsinghua on his back. Shang Tsinghua's arms tightening around his neck as Mulbejun snaps his hips, driving into him, Mulbejun snarling. He fucks him hard, and he fucks him brutal, burying his face into Shang Tsinghua's shoulder and snarling, each thrust enough to make Shang Tsinghua shake, voice raking on a moan, head thrown back.
Fuck, fuck, please.
Mulbejun snarls, the sound an animal noise. The noises of their body now a slick thing, obscene, all slapping skin. Shang Tsinghua moaning, voice breaking on gasps as he claws at Mulbejun's back. Every thrust drawing a gasp. Chatter devolving to oh gods and oh fucks, so tight around Mulbejun now that it's excruciating. The heat of it searing. Shang Tsinghua's chi surging beneath his skin.
Please, Mulbejun. Mulbejun.
All it takes is a single stroke. Mulbejun dropping a hand to fist Shang Tsinghua roughly. And then Shang Tsinghua is coming, wailing as his body draws tight. The press of it, so tight, so hot. Shang Tsinghua's body shuddering around him is a death sentence. Mulbejun snarls and sinks his teeth into Shang Tsinghua's neck, thrusting in hard and burying himself there as he shudders. The sharp crack of ice manifesting in the room, echoing as Mulbejun comes, losing himself. It's a wave. It's a tide. It's the pullback and crushing punch of a tsunami, and Mulbejun grunts as he buries himself in Shang Tsinghua, throbbing, the force of it hitting him like a punch to the gut. Shang Tsinghua cries out, breathless, as Mulbejun releases his bite just enough to sink his teeth in again, drawing out just enough that he can grind back in, coming hard, losing his seed in hot pulses. For a moment, the world is still like that. Shang Tsinghua breathing hard, sweat on his skin, Mulbejun braced above him, blood on his tongue. Breathing hard, body still drawn tight and hot from the sharp shudder of release. He can feel himself softening, can feel his own spend around himself. And when Mulbejun regains himself, breathing heavy, he pulls back just enough that he can straighten, pulling out and pressing Shang Tsinghua's legs apart so he can see the evidence of him dripping out of him. The sight sends a curl of heat down his spine, all vicious satisfaction, predatory and basal. Good, some animal part of him purrs. He's properly claimed now. His, now. Mulbejun leans down, kissing Shang Tsinghua hungrily as he settles above him, plastering him across his body. The room cold enough now that Shang Tsinghua has started to shiver a little. Shang Tsinghua lets out a little noise and leans into the kiss, shifting eagerly closer. Mulbejun breaks the kiss long enough to look at him, eyes narrowing.
Next time you doubt your place beside me, I will put you on your knees and fuck you in the throne room in front of the court, understood?
Shang Tsinghua lets out a hazy noise at that and nods, distantly, still dazed. And Mulbejun lets out a huff but kisses him again, softer this time. Gathers him up in his arms, drawing the blankets of the bed around them, because he knows that Shang Tsinghua gets uncomfortable in the cold, and isn't surprised when Shang Tsinghua turns, cuddling up against him, pressing close. For a few minutes they stay like that, Shang Tsinghua plastered warm against Mulbejun's side, half sprawled over him, skin still radiating heat, flushed from the exertion, the furs on the bed turning warm, so cozy that Mulbejun begins to find it uncomfortable. Shang Tsinghua's head is a warm weight on his shoulder,
One of his arms around Mulbei Jun's waist, and almost tentatively, fingers began tracing small circles on Mulbei Jun's abs. The silence, while comfortable, has lasted too long, and Mulbei Jun knows the gears are turning in Shang Tinghua's head long before he opens his mouth. When he finally does speak, breaking the silence, his voice is small, so hesitant, as if not even sure he dares even think it.
"So, we're really married."
Mulbei Jun lets out a huff, but it's quiet, soft, looks at Shang Tinghua, whose gaze is hidden somewhere in the blankets.
"Yes."
Does this mean you like me?"
It's said so quietly, so tentatively, that Mulbei Jun lets out a breath, turns his head and kisses Shang Tinghua, deep, slow, drawing back again just enough that their lips brush.
"Yes,"
Mulbei Jun says. Shang Tinghua draws in a breath at that, eyes wide and a bit wet.
"Oh," he says, eyes flickering down, hand coming to rest on Mulbei Jun's chest over the slow beat of his heart.
"Oh,"
Shang Tinghua says again, and then even more softly,
I like you too, my king. I like you a lot."
"Good,"
Mulbei Jun replies flatly, because that's how it should be. He lies back then, one arm winding around Shang Tinghua to draw him close against him, and Shang Tinghua comes, burying his face in Mulbei Jun's neck and cuddling close, plastering himself up against him. It's comfortable and lazy and soft, and Mulbei Jun would stay here forever if it meant he never lost the feeling of Shang Tinghua, so warm and soft against his side. Mulbei Jun has almost dozed off by the time Shang Tinghua speaks again.
"Ah,"
Shang Tinghua says, letting out a noise of realization, and then laughs.
"Fuck, I didn't invite Shen Qingqiu to the wedding."
Mulbei Jun closes his eyes, letting out a huff.
"Fuck Shen Qingqiu."
"No," Shang Tinghua says, speaking louder. "You don't get it. He is never going to let me live this down. Oh my god, he is never going to let me live this down. Fuck, is it too late to move to a different country, you think?"
The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. And if you've enjoyed this narration, you're welcome to leave me feedback. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening.